Is it over for the Golden State Warriors? Or will Kevin Durant put on that Superman cape and come to save the day? And is the great WWE, former WWE wrestler Enzo used to say, "Bada boom, realest show in the room. How you doing?" Let's get the damn show started.
Listen, when Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike grab mics, it's real sports, real talk, on the field or on the court. If it happened in New York, it's covered like a blanket, dog. Interviews are ill, simply up close and personal. Batter up, Lloyd's batting first, set the tone. Mike's either at the stadium or the garden on the phone. Here we go, Giants are Jets, Yankees are Mets, Knicks are Nets. This is only an intro, the show is next.
A-O-B! And please pardon my fresh as we bring you all new episode of the Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike Sports Talk Show. Listeners, today is Monday, June 10th, 2019, and this show airs, yes, this show airs every Monday from 1 p.m. to 2 p.m. on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, CastBox, TuneIn, Pocket Cast, and Spotify. Be sure to hit that subscribe button so you won't miss a damn thing. And me and Mad Mike also on social media, Lloyd A. Thompson, one word, Instagram, Lloyd A. Thompson, one word, Twitter. Be sure to hit that follow button. And if you got any questions that you'd like for me and Mad Mike to answer, you can always shoot them through email to lloyd@pardonmyfresh.com. Or you can send them directly to the website. Great show for you as always, listeners. We're going to talk some NBA Finals basketball. Is it over for the Golden State Warriors? Or do they pull off a miraculous comeback? Me and the man Mike are going to give our thoughts on that. We're also going to talk some Jets football. The New York Jets have hired a new GM. What's Mad Mike's thoughts on that? What's my thoughts on that as well? The New York Yankees miss out on Dallas Keuchel as Dallas Keuchel has signed a deal with the Atlanta Braves. And we're also going to talk some New York Knicks as now the Brooklyn Nets have made a trade, trading away Allen Crabbe to free up some space where they can sign two max free agent players. So will Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving sign with the New York Knicks? Will they sign with the Brooklyn Nets? Who will they sign with? We're going to talk about that. So as always, listeners, let's buckle up. Sit back and relax and start spreading the news. Hey, yo, let's get it.
How sweet it is. It's Monday. That means the Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike Sports Show is back. Let's go.
As always, we got to find out where the Mad Mike is and where he's calling from. Yo, Mad Mike, where you at today, baby?
Lord, yo, I'm calling from the Midwest. Came out to catch the Cubs St. Louis series. I've always wanted to attend such a rivalry. You know, us being Yankee fans, we know the Boston Yankee rivalry, but this one ranks up there with it.
Listen, man, that is a great rivalry for all those that don't know. It's one of the most historic rivalries in baseball. And for whatever reason, St. Louis is always there, Mad Mike. They always, on paper, you look at them and be like, yeah, I don't know. But St. Louis was always in the thick of things towards the end of the baseball season.
But before they're just missing that star power, man.
Yeah. Star power. And speaking of star power, Mad Mike, let's start the show off before we talk baseball a little bit later in the show. Let's start the show off with the NBA Finals. Okay, and the Raptors at this point, Mad Mike, are surprising everybody, including myself, and now the Raptors are huge favorites to win the title after taking a 3-1 lead. The Raptors scored, their last victory is 105-92 over the Golden State Warriors in Game 4 of the 2019 NBA Finals on Friday night, and now they're definite favorites, as some may say, to capture their first NBA championship in franchise history, thanks to taking a 3-1 lead. Now, again, the Warriors are hobbled. All right, they came in with the clash against the rivals, against the Raptors, as a clear favorite, Mad Mike, to win a title despite uncertainty about whether Kevin Durant will return from a calf injury during the series, and Durant has remained sidelined in the Golden State Warriors. Also dealt with injuries to Klay Thompson and DeMarcus Cousins and Kevin Looney. Throughout this series, leaving the two-time defending champions short on their usual offensive power. Now, Kevin Durant practiced over the weekend, Mad Mike, and is expected to play, which I didn't think Kevin Durant would play. I didn't think he would play, Mad Mike, down 3-1. I wasn't expecting him to play, but there's a good chance that he's going to play in this game later on this evening. And Kawhi Leonard and the Raptors, I think they've taken full advantage of the injuries. Leonard, who won an NBA Finals MVP award in 2014 with the San Antonio Spurs, is on pace to take home that honor again. This young man is averaging 30.8 points and 10.3 rebounds in the first four games in this series, Mad Mike. And Toronto's first chance to secure their title comes again later this evening as they return home for Game 5, Mad Mike. What's your thoughts thus far on the series? I was watching the game, Mad Mike, and for whatever reason, DeMarcus Cousins was annoying me because it just seemed like, I don't know if he's out of shape, Mad Mike, or he just wasn't giving, you know what I'm saying? They played sloppy ball. And I thought they got exposed. Listen, Steph Curry is not known to play great defense. You know, and Draymond Green, I was talking to my boys, and I was like, yo, this dude is overrated. Not that I never thought Draymond Green was overrated before this. But it just goes to show at the end of the day, Mad Mike, how important and how good Kevin Durant is. Because we've had all this talk about Kevin Durant riding the coattails of this team and this organization. And now, everything has been, you know what I'm saying? Now, you're seeing how good of a player Kevin Durant is. And this, if Kevin Durant comes back, Mad Mike, and Golden State could somehow win 3 games in a row to take the championship, phew, and then he turns around and leaves? Whew! But Durant will be back, so I don't know if they'll be at 100%, because obviously I don't think Klay Thompson is 100%, and it doesn't seem like DeMarcus Cousins is 100%, but you still get back the best player on your team at the end of the day. What's your thoughts on the finals thus far, Mad Mike?
Well, I thought that Golden State could run with Toronto all the way up until Klay got hurt. I kind of find it funny that, you know, maybe his injury will start showing people that they can't James Harden their way to the free throw line all the time. And what I mean is he caused his own injury. He kicked his leg out to the side to try to create contact and get a foul call on a three-pointer. He ends up missing the contact, and he ends up straining his own hamstring upon his landing. So maybe, you know, Golden State is getting a little bit of what they deserve in this series. I thought they would win once he got hurt. I thought it was over. I, for one, never really bought into the fact that KD was going to come back. I think it's funny the stories that were coming out yesterday that Golden State is kind of miffed by his injury, and they assumed he would already have been back. I find that to be funny. I find that to be, you know, some players in that locker room deflecting because, that you know, it's their legacy that's being questioned. When you talk about, you know, KD needed them, not the other way around. Well, you know, they haven't been competitive in this series. So like you just said, it looks to me like KD was very much needed. But at the same time, you got to remember, Iguodala hasn't been totally healthy. And the other guys, Kevon Looney, who I happen to think is overrated. They happen to think that he, you know, they'll sell him as a foundational piece. but you know, he's playing with a broken collarbone. It's just, it reminds me of that Cavs series. Remember the first one where the Cavs, just everybody that you could think of was hurt, and they end up beating them. And then the following year, you get the Draymond injury. You get the, you know, Steph was playing on a bad knee. And then you get the Andrew Bogut broken hand or whatever it was. Like, just how it piled up on them, and they ended up losing. That's how I feel now. Like, everything is just piling up on them. DeMarcus Cousins is out of shape. You know, we can talk about it all we want. The fact is, he tore his quad. He tears his quad. That means that he's not, you know, you have an upper body injury. You know, like I know, at least you're on a treadmill. You know what I mean? At least you're running up and down that court in practice, just keeping your cardio up, your stamina up. He tore his quad. He wasn't doing anything. If he was doing anything, it was weightlifting, which is not going to help him with his cardio, his stamina, and especially in a series like the finals. But he did give him that game two. He gave him a special game two, and it looks like that game two, as special as it was, it took everything he had in him, and he's got nothing left to offer. Now, like you just said, if KD comes to the rescue, I don't know what to tell you. If he comes to the rescue, I think he silenced all the doubters, all the people that said that he needed them, all the people that said he won championships on their backs, he rode their coattails. I think he silences everybody. I think that at that point, he can, you know, basically calm down, you know, June, July, whatever, you know, come down through June and just basically start calculating everything he's going to do in free agency. And then from there, he's ready in July to make that decision. He silenced all the doubters. He can do whatever he wants come July.
Talking about bittersweet victory, man, Mike, if he can do that and then turn around and then walk out the door and then go somewhere else, whether it be...
Lord, it would be a Willis Reed moment. Can you imagine his Willis Reed moment culminating in him signing with the New York Knicks?
Right, and then taking that franchise or the Knicks franchise to the playoffs. What? Listen, yeah. It's something that could be envisioned, man, Mike. It can be. Because Golden State, even though they're down 3-1, it doesn't mean that it's completely over, even though people are saying that it is. Now, if Kevin Durant somehow doesn't play, then yeah, it is a good chance that it could be over. But if he could come back and be maybe more than 50% of what we get from Kevin Durant, because he's another player that's difficult to defend on the court when he has the ball, and he's not a bad defender himself when he's guarding somebody else.
Look, 80% of him changes the series, and the reason it changes the series is because automatically, even 80% of him, Kawhi Leonard has to defend him. And if Kawhi Leonard has to work any little bit, the slightest bit more, if he has to work defensively, then it changes his game offensively. Remember something, we're looking at him, he's hobbling around the court too. He's limping all over the place too. So if he's got to now defend Kevin Durant, even at 80%, that's going to take away some from his offense. And not only that, 80% of Kevin Durant changes the game for everybody else. You know, it's going to get more open shots for you know, and when I say shots, I mean like pull-up jumpers, not pull-up jumpers, but like spot-up jump shots for Clay, sharpshooters like Clay and Curry. That's going to change the game. Everything changes when he's on the court. It just does. And before we say they can't win 3 in a row with him, remember something. They're 8-1 in the last 2 finals with him. So we're saying that they can't go out and get 3 straight victories. That's absolutely insane.
And also, let's factor in, man, Mike, with him being on the court, it has to elevate everybody else's game. Everybody else in that Golden State Warriors roster and team has to be charged that Kevin Durant is back on the court again. And another, like you said, you pointed out Andre Iguodala, man, Mike. What'd he have, 2 points or 4 points? I looked up and it was the fourth quarter, and he was taking free throws towards the end of the game, and he had 2 points. I was like, holy crap. All he has is, he has under 6 points?
He's not healthy, though, man.
No, I'm not saying that, but I'm just saying that just goes to show, you know, and now the point is, you know, now the with the question is, Mad Mike, is Toronto winning this series because they're that good? Or are they winning this series because of all the injuries that this Golden State Warriors are dealing with?
Okay. Well, you can only play the team on the court. So I don't want to take it away from them, because we could ask the same questions about Golden State the first time around, even though people forget. Golden State, no one expected them to be great that first championship run. Nobody. You remember all the talk was about LeBron going back to Cleveland and Cleveland and LeBron. No one knew that was coming from them. So, you know, I kind of give them a pass when they talk about the injuries. But, you know, I mean, listen. If I told you you can be 100% of your roster in Toronto and you can play 75%, you know, the Dubs at 75%, would you turn that down?
Oh, nah. I mean, listen, and then also let's factor in the officials, Matt Mike. You pointed out
brutal.
On a show a couple, I don't know if it was last week's show or the show before that, how many fouls the officials are calling. Now, I think game one had a referee by the name of Ed Malloy who annoys the crap out of me. And we had, you know, I asked you the question, does the NBA keep the same officiating crew throughout the entire series? Well, Ed Malloy, he didn't ref the last two games. So I don't know if they thought that crew was doing a bad job, but this crew that they have now isn't doing that much better.
Maybe they don't make the crews travel. Maybe they have a crew out in California and they have a crew out in Toronto. I mean, I don't know. We'll see if Malloy tonight's game.
Damn, man, Mike. It's the NBA Finals. I'm not saying don't make calls if dudes are going into the basket and they get clotheslined or something like that. But you gotta let them play basketball. At some point, all these ticky-tack fouls that we're seeing being called.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. I thought game three. I'll be honest with you. I thought game three was one of them. I watched the first half. I thought it was kind of questionable, some of the stuff they were doing. And then I listened to the second half. On the radio, and I heard Hubie Brown on the radio talking about it too, kind of talking about the timing of some of the calls. It allowed Toronto to kind of, you know, there was a point where I think Golden State got the lead down to four in the third quarter, and then there was just a handful of plays, some fouls. I mean, Golden State, I know Toronto's the best defensive team in the league, but Golden State has been a top five defensive team over this run. And, you know, just the way that Toronto has been able to steal momentum. I mean, we're talking about Toronto has spent, just off the top of my head, I'm going to tell you, two-thirds of the quarters played in this finals, they've been in a bonus at some point in each quarter. And that's not Golden State basketball. It's just not. And I don't know if it's them or if it's the refs. But you know, Golden State has seemed all series to be kind of turned off by the refs.
So, listen, Mike, obviously, game five is tonight. Okay? Who do you have winning game five? I'm going to say that I think Golden State, if Kevin Durant plays, I'm going to give them the victory in this evening's game. And don't rule Golden State out, listeners. Let's not rule them out. Even though Toronto's an odds-on favorite to win this thing, do not rule them out. But I have Golden State winning this game, man, Mike.
If Kevin Durant plays 24 minutes, 24 effective minutes, I'll give them the win. And the only reason I'm putting the number 24 out there is because that's exactly two quarters of basketball. That means he'll play half this game. If he can manage half this game, I think they'll win. If he's anything less than that, and I don't even care if it's 23 minutes, they lose this game. And we see Drake, unbelievably see Drake celebrating and throwing it in all our faces.
And I was just about to mention his high. Listen, I'm a light-skinned brother as well, so who am I to be calling, what is that saying, the kettle black or the pot calling the kettle black or whatever it is. But it annoys me, man, and I said it last week, and I'm not going to get into this whole Drake thing again, but I agree with Mad Mike, listeners, to see him the smile on his face or his actions when this happens is going to drive me nuts. And also, before we move on to the New York Knicks, Mad Mike, what's your thoughts on this play with
the owner
and Kyle Lowry, who jumped into the stands? Mind you, he jumped into the stands and annihilated a female. If you watch the footage, caught a female really good. The owner ends up turning around, shoving him, which I'm not saying the owner was right for doing that, Mad Mike. But this owner got banned for a year, and he got fined $500,000. But you allow somebody like Drake to be on the sideline and rubbing shoulder coaches and antagonizing players during games and after games?
Well, that's the tricky part of all of this, right? You need Drake more than you need, I don't even remember which, it wasn't Lakeham who got suspended. I don't remember dude's name. But you need him to grow your game more, Drake, than the owner of Golden State, right? Because Drake is the one that's going to be out there making music. He's going to be the one that's out there putting the NBA trophy in his video. So you tolerate more from him. You know, the Golden State owner is the Golden State owner. I mean, you suspend him for a year, so what? I mean, if I'm him, I'd be upset because they're moving into their new arena next year and he can't attend the games. But at the same time, he still owns them. You know what I mean? He still has a new building. He'll be back, you know, after the 2020 season.
Does that make the NBA, Mad Mike?
Oh, I never said it made the NBA
look
good.
No, I'm just saying, I'm just making a statement. I'm just throwing a statement out there into the universe. Like, how hypocritical does this make the NBA look? Where you can suspend a owner and, you know, or a fan, quote unquote, a full year and then fine them a $500,000, but you let somebody else do the complete opposite?
And well, you got to remember something. Fans have been complaining, not fans, players have been complaining a lot lately about their treatment by fans. So the NBA is going to be very sensitive to that. I'll be honest with you. I thought it was I don't know. I don't know why he... Like, I guess I know why he reacted that way, but I don't know why he reacted that way. I mean, it's not like he went into the stands for no reason. You know what I mean? Like, I don't understand why it boiled over the way it did.
Right. It wasn't like it was a, you know, I mean, obviously it was a forceful push. But it's not like he pushed Kyle Lowry and he fell over the seats or something like that.
Yeah, but I mean, Kyle Lowry, what I mean is, it's not like Kyle Lowry just went into the stands for no reason. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like
he
just went over and slapped the drink out of there.
I was talking to my brother, and my brother was saying that maybe, you know, what they need to do is put some kind of barrier up to keep the fans away from the court.
No, because you know what? Once again, now that's a selling point for them, right? It's just like, we just had this conversation with baseball last week about the netting, right? That's a conversation that it's about the haves and the have-nots, right? The haves get to sit down there. They get to be a part of it. The have-nots, not so much. You know what I mean? It'll never happen.
The equation where we said if you sit that low in a baseball game, you got to expect to possibly get a line drive screaming at you. And if you sit that low in a basketball game, guess what? There's a good chance that you might have a 6'3", or 6'4" individual weighing over 200 pounds diving into you.
And that's my point. My point is I don't understand to an extent. I just don't know why the owner went nuts the way he did. It's not like he, you know what I mean? It's not like Kyle Lowry said, oh man, that's the owner. Let me go dive right at him. You know what I mean? Like, he's not thinking that way. And not for nothing, he probably didn't even know who the guy was. If we're being 110% fair, he probably didn't even realize who he was diving at.
Again, I'm not exactly saying that the NBA, you know, my thing with the NBA dropping the ball is that it's not even Steven all the way around.
I agree with you there, 100%.
You know,
it's just not.
Separate fans based on who they are. You just don't.
I agree with you. That you're right. Listen, The one rule applies to everybody, regardless of who you are.
Agreed. Now, Mad Mike, I got it. My homegirl sent me a text message, and she said, Lloyd, what's up, homie? And I said, what's good? And she was like, man, that Stephen A. Smith is driving me crazy. And I said, what's Stephen A. Smith talking about? And she mentioned that Stephen A. Smith is now talking about the same Stephen A. Smith that said it was almost a lock that Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant is coming to the Knicks. Now the same Stephen A. Smith is saying that the Brooklyn Nets, that Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant are going to the Brooklyn Nets or talking about going to the Brooklyn Nets, especially after Brooklyn pulled off a trade where they was able to get rid of Allen Crabbe, Mad Mike, and free up two max slots. Now, we talked about this like we always do. You know, we just don't talk sports here. Listen, it's me and Mad Mike are always talking sports. That's what makes this show what it is. But Mad Mike was saying to me that there's a reason why this trade may benefit the Knicks, Mad Mike. And why did you bring that to my attention? What's your thoughts on that?
I thought that this might benefit the Knicks because just last week on the show, you were talking to me about Atlanta pursuing the Knicks' number 3 pick for the 8 and 10 pick. So if the 8 and 10 pick is not enough for the New York Knicks to consider moving back, maybe getting the Nets' 17th pick and combining that with the 8th and 10th pick is enough to get the Knicks to say, wait, an 8, a 10, 17? If the 3 is not enough to get Anthony Davis, maybe 8, 10, 17 and both of Dallas' picks. Now all of a sudden we're saying, hey, if Kyrie's going to Brooklyn, and hear me out, Lloyd, right? Remember something, the Knicks can make a trade and bring in salary as long as they have cap space to do so. They don't have to trade any players. They don't have to match any salary. So what I'm saying to you is, hey, Atlanta, I'm going to give you 3 for 8, 10, 17. New Orleans, I am then going to give you 8, 10, 17, both of Dallas's picks. And I'm going to give you one player on my roster, one player, a young player on my active roster, whether that's Mitchell Robinson, whoever it is. And here you go. You have Anthony Davis. I get Anthony Davis. You get Mitchell Robinson and 5 first-round draft picks. Right now, boom, would you do it?
Oh, 1,000%.
You would do it, right?
Yes.
Now, I'm operating under the Stephen A. Smith situation, right? Kyrie's not coming here, right? As far as he's concerned, Kyrie is going to Brooklyn. So now I'm saying I can still attract Kevin Durant. If you're the Knicks and you're the Nets, you're saying, hey, come play with Kyrie. Hey, come play with AD and all of these other guys I didn't have to get rid of. What are you doing? Not only that, but you still have money, because remember something, the Knicks have almost $80 million. The Nets have $67 million. So if you can get KD here, Anthony Davis only makes $25 million. That's $65. You still have about $15, $16 million left to play with. Plus, you still have all your pieces.
Agreed, man, Mike. And also, let's throw in the fact that, like you said, the one thing that the Knicks have, or one of the things that the Knicks have that the Nets don't, is the ability to trade for Anthony Davis.
Correct.
Mind you, Anthony Davis, the Nets was not one of the teams that Anthony Davis listed as his preferred destination. It was the Knicks, the Lakers, and the Clippers. And yeah, on the fact that both of us are native New Yorkers, born and raised here, the Knicks have always been a bigger draw or the bigger talk of the town than the Nets.
Yeah,
just like, and if those guys come to the Knicks and do it in the Knicks uniform, it'd be so much different than them doing it in the Brooklyn Nets uniform, man, Mike.
Yeah, with all due respect, there's no history behind doing it with Brooklyn. If you come and do it, I mean, you know what I mean? It's different. It's and that's the one thing that I do agree when I heard. To change sports real quick, Chris Johnson said it. If you do it here, it lasts forever. Look at Joe Willie Namath. You know what I mean? Go look at Joe Namath. And if you can come here and do it, you're a freaking legend. And if you're selling yourself to Kevin Durant, I mean, what's Brooklyn going to say? Come take the town over. We can take the town from these guys. If you're the Knicks, you go and you say, you're going to go down in history with guys like Walt Clyde Frazier and Willis Reed and Dave DeBuscher and Patrick Ewing. John Starks shot 3 for 17 in a finals, and he's a hero here. Imagine what would happen if you won a title. What would you do? I mean, yo, the lore is retarded. And if you're a guy, once again, then for me, this is bigger than anything. This is the biggest argument I make. You want to be better than that. You want to be this era's Michael Jordan. You want to jump LeBron James. You're not going to do it with those Golden State titles. You want to win a title that's bigger, that means more than Cleveland, than the Cleveland title to LeBron James. And doing it in New York, you can not only do you win in New York, which means that I don't think we can compare Knicks and Cavs. A championship for the Knicks compared to a championship for the Cavs, there's no competition there, right? But here's the other thing you can say. The Knicks chased LeBron James twice and failed. You can then tell that as LeBron James was scared to come here, you did something LeBron James didn't even believe he could do.
No, I mean, look, you're absolutely right. And look, it's the media, and this is what I was telling my homegirl also. It's the media, Mad Mike. It just gives the media something else to talk about. Because if it was just the Knicks and only the Knicks, that's not making nothing interesting.
It's not. It's also the circus, right? It's also the circus. The media wants the circus that is the Knicks. You got to think about something. Who's in the media? Who's at ESPN? Right now, like when you turn on ESPN, who are their faces of basketball?
You got Jalen Rose, Paul Pierce, who annoys the nonsense out of me.
Paul Pierce, who's what? Who's grown to hate the Knicks. Jalen Rose, who we know for his days in Indiana, grown to hate the Knicks. When you think about it, you're talking about a bunch of guys that this is what they're supposed to do. The Knicks are supposed to remain a joke, a circus. The Jets are supposed to remain a circus. And I want to talk about the Jets hiring a new GM a little later in the show and go over some of that stuff because, you know, the circus is in town, right? The circus was in town. Now, I just want to expose the media just a little bit more on that.
There you have it. So, listeners, we still have so much more basketball to talk about moving forward. Obviously, by the time we do next week's show, there will be an NBA champion, right, Matt Mike? The series will be over by Sunday, right?
Yes, by next Sunday.
By next Sunday.
As a matter of fact, it would be over next Sunday if it goes 7 games.
If it stretches that far. So, listeners, in next week's show, we're going to be talking NBA champions. We'll see what happens. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and when we come back, we're going to do exactly that. We're going to talk about this new Jets GM hire and the Yankees struck out on Dallas Keuchel. What does this mean for the Yankees, and how does me and Mad Mike feel about this? We'll be right back with more of the Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike Sports Talk Show. Welcome back to the Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike Sports Talk. Listen, it's the first half of the show we were spent on talking NBA Finals basketball and the New York Knicks and easing the mind of my homie about Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving signing with the Brooklyn Nets. Now, it's going to be interesting to see what Mad Mike has to say, listeners, as the New York Jets have a new general manager. And all fans excited, Mad Mike, I think understandably so, about news that Joe Douglas has agreed to terms and will be the next man to occupy the Jets GM chair. But soon enough, the hoopla will die down. Then it will be time for Douglas to pull on those gloves and get nitty and gritty, Mad Mike. I want to point out some things or a few key moves that the Jets general manager, shortly after his Zooms and Rolls, that he has to face, Mad Mike. Okay, and one thing is going to be interesting to see, if you agree with me, is he has to find that right-hand man. All right? And overlooked piece in that GM search, this isn't the only job the Jets needed to fill, but Douglas will now have to find someone to be his second in command as the vice president of player personnel, considering Brian Herman, Heimerdinger?
Heimerdinger.
You know, the same time as Mike Maccagnan. All right, number two is flesh out the scouting department. And this falls right behind finding the right hand man, but not too much. Douglas, let's face it, Douglas will have to decide which of the Jets' current scouts can stay, which are go, who should be brought in to take their place. This all happens outside the public view for the most part. Fans aren't keeping up with names and profiles of in-house scouts. But if it's a crucial piece of the puzzle within a healthy front office, Matt Mike, nailing these hires and having good talent evaluators in place, that is necessary to be a successful operating organization, Matt Mike. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, so I don't forget my point on that. One of the key pieces to him taking this job was the Jets assuring him that spending money on and revamping the scouting department, it was not going to be a problem. There wasn't going to be, basically, not that, hey, here's a blank check, but they promised him as close to a blank check as a GM can have to build the scouting department, to build everything in his eyes. And just throw three names out there, three huge names all being considered here. Todd McShay of ESPN. People think that he's just an analyst and, oh, this is just for name recognition like Mike Mayock. No, people forget they were teammates. Him and Joe Douglas were teammates at Richmond in college. People forget that he was the VP of what's now known as Scouts, Inc. For 10 years, he ran basically scouting. That was his career. And then you have Phil Savage. Phil Savage, who came up with him in Baltimore. Phil Savage, who, you know, has been a top scout along, you know, the last, what I'm going to say, 17, 18 years, one of the top scouts in this league. And then Daniel Jeremiah, another guy he came up through the ranks with, who's, I think, with NFL Network at the moment. Once again, another guy who, oh, it's just another TV guy. No, it's another guy who came up through the Baltimore Ravens scouting department, who really built a name for himself and would be willing to get back into football for the right team, for the right reasons, for the right deal. He has an opportunity to build a power five of, you know, front offices right now.
All right. Now, here's my third point, Matt Mike. I think that he's going to need to lock up the remaining draft picks. And I think this is where we get into the nitty gritty of roster moves. And this is just a simple one, though, considering rookie contracts are slotted. So both Quinnen Williams and Chimonga Egoa, if I can pronounce his name right, the Jets' two remaining unsigned draft picks, basically know what money is headed their way. So the only obstacle stopping the contract from being signed really is contract language. And hammering that out and getting these two players on the official roster should be Douglas' first task when it comes to the current crop of players, Matt Mike.
Okay, go ahead. No, I was just going to say, I think Truma should be fairly easy. He's a late third round pick. And, It might just be keeping some money available at the moment until you know, just in case some guys get cut. But you're not going to let a third round left tackle go. You're just not. So, you know, Quinnen, I don't know what holds up first round picks nowadays. I don't know what holds up any pick. You know what you're getting. It's all about language. And the language these days doesn't really change much for rookies. So I don't understand why guys aren't signed immediately. I never have.
There you have. Now, number four, and it's going to be interesting to say what you have to say about this one, Matt Mike. I think he needs to extend Leonard Williams' contract. And this topic came up during OTAs. William, you know, he said that he's not thinking much about his contract, but like to stay in New York for the long term. Now it's up to Douglas to decide whether he wants Williams too. And if he does, Douglas also has to decide if it's worth locking him up now, Matt Mike. But he's played, you know, he's played a single snap under the new coaching staff alongside Quinnen Williams, or whether it would be better to wait and see how the season plans out, even if that means risking Leonard Williams' price tag increasing in free agency or him walking away altogether. It's not an easy call. What's your thoughts on that point that I just made, Matt Mike?
I don't know. I was looking at this and I was saying, they still have a franchise tag. You kind of don't want it to go there. Just my initial thoughts on it is Joe Douglas always signed. He always identified franchise foundational pieces, and he always made sure they were locked up early. And if you actually notice, this week the Eagles signed Carson Wentz to his extension 2 years early. So they identify, he identifies, and he gets guys locked up, you know, early enough. I don't know about Leo because it's a new defensive system. It's a new general manager. It's a new head coach. The head coach is actually head over heels over Leonard Williams. He said that just from their tape study when he played the Jets as a Miami coach. He absolutely loves him. So it's a matter of talk to your head coach, talk to your defensive coordinator, and make sure that these guys are on board. You know, I really did give this a lot of thought, man. This is the first, you bringing it to me for the first time, but thought about it all weekend. You got to think about it. Remember when Matt came in here and John Idzik had all that money and he completely botched the Mo Wilkerson situation? He didn't get him locked up. He made him play on that fifth-year option. And Matt came in here with 1 year to evaluate the situation with Mo Wilkerson. He ended up paying him due to media pressure, even though the media now wants to say it was a terrible contract. You know, they were all on board with it due to fan pressure and media pressure. He ended up having to pay him. But you don't necessarily know if that's somebody that he fully evaluated and was comfortable. And that's what worries me with Joe Douglas. I think Leo's a better player. I think he's a better name. He's a better player. I think he's got a better attitude than Mo. You know, Mo had alcohol problems here. Actually just got arrested for a DWI as a free agent. So we'll see, man. I would lock him up personally, but who the hell knows? Do you know what Leo is asking for? I haven't heard anything.
Yeah, I don't know any numbers.
So, you know, if Leo's looking for 5 years, you know, $90 million, I wouldn't give it to him. I mean, Aaron Donald just held a pass rushing camp for defensive linemen, you know, for all defensive players, right? Linemen and linebackers. And I didn't see Leo there, you know, and I didn't see any Jets there. And I'm over here saying you got all these guys in the league that are looking to not Aaron Donald, I'm sorry, Von Miller had a defensive camp. And guys like Aaron Donald are showing up, like legitimate Pro Bowlers are showing up. Not one Jet showed up. So I don't know how dedicated, you know, Leo is. Connor Hughes says that Leo is not necessarily lost weight. They say that he hasn't lost any weight. He's still at 300 pounds. But he said that he looks extremely fast. He looks extremely agile. And he looks extremely thin. So are you telling me that it's either a coaching decision by Todd Bowles? Hey, guy, we need you to be big and brolic and you know, play slower. We need a bigger body defensive lineman to succeed in ours. Or is it Greg Williams saying, hey, no, slim down, get lean. I need you agile. I need you bursting through that line. And, you know, we don't know. Or was it Leo saying, yeah, I'm going into my fifth year and I need to make some changes. I need to get this contract. Right. I don't know what it is.
And before I move on to my fifth and final point, Matt, Mike, you brought up Carson Wentz. And the Eagles signed Carson Wentz to a $128 million contract overall with $107.9 million guaranteed. Is Carson Wentz a player who's, I think, he's been in the league, 3 years or 4 years, Matt Mike? He's been injured for most of his time as a quarterback in the NFL. Is he worth that $107.9 million, Matt Mike?
Healthy Carson Wentz is worth $100 million. The problem is, you don't know if and when, you know when you're going to have a healthy Carson Wentz at the start of the season, right? You don't know for how long you're going to have a healthy Carson Wentz, and that's the danger of it. And like I said, it's they ID'd him, and they don't like Joe Douglas. It's one thing he doesn't like. Joe Douglas does not like contract disputes. He does not like contract. He doesn't want that tension around his team. And if you think about it, he comes from Baltimore, where they've never had those contract issues. Baltimore, this was the first year. As a matter of fact, do you know, and I just saw this, do you know, leading back to the year 2000, Baltimore has never lost a Pro Bowl first-round pick to free agency.
Wow,
did you know that?
That's a
until this year when they lost C.J. Mosley to the New York Jets. Before that, they've never lost, and he's part of that. That's part of his belief. You don't draft guys, Pro Bowlers at that, and string them along because that's why this is an interesting hire. I know we're kind of veering off course, but that's why this is an interesting hire, Lloyd, because he believes in something that Woody Johnson has shown us since 2000 that he doesn't believe. Woody Johnson believes in the savings. Hey, if I have a Pro Bowl first round safety in Jamal Adams and I'm getting him for $3 million a year, I can use the other $8 million that he would cost me on something else. And he's always done that. And then he's had to listen. They've had contract disputes with everybody. People forget the Brickshaw Ferguson. Yeah, lifelong Jet, and you never really heard because he wasn't loud. He was in a contract battle with the New York Jets during the Tannenbaum era. Darrell Revis. We can go down the line. Jumbo Elliott. Kevin White. You go down the line. John Abraham. First round pass. They haven't had a pass rush since John Abraham. They didn't want to pay him. You know, when you start really looking at it, that's why this is an interesting hire to me, because you're looking at you just hired a guy that believes, absolutely believes the opposite of what Woody Johnson has shown you to believe. I don't know what Chris Johnson believes. I know Chris Johnson believes that we needed a change from the way we were doing business, and this was his hire. But we don't know what Woody feels. We know that this goes against Woody Johnson's core beliefs of signing players early.
All right. And now the fifth and final one, man, Mike, and I want to get your thoughts on this as well, is I think that he needs to fill a hole at quarterback. Cornerback, I'm sorry, not quarterback, listeners. I'm sorry, I meant to say cornerback. And if Douglas is going to make any sort of notable additions in his early stages of his tenure as the Mets GM, I think that they should come at cornerback, man, Mike. I think that this is by far the team's weakest spot on the roster right now, and the Jets need to bring in competition for Darrell Roberts, who slotted in as the number two cornerback. Perhaps maybe re-sign Morris Claiborne, who remains a free agent. And they also need to add depth, man, Mike. And relying on Tremaine Johnson and Roberts as starters, then leaning on Jeremy Clark and Derrick Jones as backups, it sure looks like a recipe for disaster, man, Mike. What's your thoughts on that before we move on?
I think the Jets have their offensive line depth is terrible and their defensive back depth is terrible. I know people are nervous about Tremaine Johnson. I'm not, simply because sometimes players don't fit schemes. And Tremaine Johnson wasn't the first player. He wasn't the first veteran to have issues with Todd Bowles. That was one thing about the Todd Bowles era, right? It's been issue after issue after issue with players. Add Tremaine Johnson to that. There is history. There is evidence to tell us that Greg Williams will get the absolute most out of Tremaine Johnson. He was a Pro Bowler under Greg Williams. I'm sorry. You know, in his defensive scheme. So I think that will help him. Now, I never liked Darrell Roberts. I don't know what Mike Maccagnan and Todd Bowles saw in Darrell Roberts. It's not like they just drafted him and he was their first team. We're talking about a guy that got cut from the Green Bay Packers, another team that's never, you know, been amazing in the secondary. They've struggled to find secondary help, and if a team that has struggled to find secondary help is cutting somebody, I don't understand how he becomes a major player in your team. I like Perry Nickerson in the slot. I like Derrick Jones. Now, I'm not telling you Derrick Jones is going to be good, but I'm going to tell you that Todd Bowles had a problem with finding time for younger players. Derrick Jones was the best defensive back last year in OTAs and the preseason. You can ask any reporter, they will tell you Derrick Jones popped. And as he made this team, and as soon as the regular season started, Todd Bowles never played him. And maybe Todd Bowles knows something we don't, but that's a guy that I don't mind having on the bench because I want to find out about him. I do. He was a former six-round pick, so obviously there's a, you know, a ton of teams that didn't see anything there. Jeremy Clark, on the other hand, former Michigan standout. He was a shutdown corner, tore his knee up, and the Jets drafted him, I believe, in the 7th round. And just took time to rehab him and bring him back. I can't tell you what he looks like as a player now. Some guys never recover, and he might be one of those guys. You're right. I don't know what they have in that room right now. I don't. I know that outside of Tremaine Johnson, no one completely excites me. They just don't.
And with all that being said, man, Mike, and you being a big Jets fan, are you on board with this hire?
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. Look, here's what I'm going to tell you. I'm going to tell you this. And I think I said it last week or 2 weeks ago, maybe a month ago. If you get it right, who cares how you got there? And what I mean by that is, if Joe Douglas and Adam Gase become this amazing tandem. It's the first time the Jets are going to have two guys that believe in the same thing. So these guys have worked together in the past, and this guy is the smartest. He's the smartest, not the smartest. He's the hottest GM prospect. The maybe since Chris Ballard, he might be one of the highest rated GM prospects outside of Chris Ballard in the last 10 years, Lloyd. You're talking about a guy who learned how to scout from Ozzie Newsome and learned how to manipulate the cap and trades losing the guy's name in Philly. Howie Roseman, right? Think about that. You're talking about two of the top guys at what they do, maybe in the history of this league, and you were groomed by both. So, hell yeah. You know what? He got a six-year deal because he deserves it. I mean, you know, 5-year deals have been the new thing anyway. He ended up getting himself a 6-year deal. And you got to think about it. He at the end of this season, he was going to get to choose. He was going to be the number one guy on the market. He was going to get to choose whatever team needed a new GM. And before you say, well, hey, Mike, only bad teams fire their GMs. Well, Houston was 11-5, won their division, made the playoffs, and just fired their GM this week too. So you have no idea who was going to become available. So, and as a matter of fact, they actually were looking at him too, and he chose the Jets. Think about that for a second. And another thing to think about while I'm at it, we all criticize the Jets as being this dysfunctional franchise. Consider this. The Houston Texans just fired their GM after 11-5 season with 4 years left on his deal because he doesn't get along with his coach. And then Joe Douglas chose the Jets over them. They just fired Rick Smith 18 months ago as their GM. They groomed Mike Maccagnan to be a GM. And the Jets just fired him this year. So you could argue that three Houston Texans GMs got fired in the last 18 months. But the Jets are a laughing stock, and they do things wrong.
And you know why? It's because it's the New York Jets.
And that's what I was saying earlier when I said, you know, we can have these talks in the media. We know what the media wants. We know that they have an agenda, and they want to keep it going. But I'm showing you right now. I mean, three Houston Texan GMs or GMs out of their system have been fired in the last 18 months.
Yeah, well,
they have Deshaun Watson. They have J.J. Watt. They have Jadeveon Clowney. They have guys, too. They have guys that anybody would want to coach, right?
Yeah, there you go. Absolutely right about that. If I was a damn coach or a head coach, I would like to coach those young men.
And then they got Bill O'Brien, who's supposed to be one of these top-level, top-notch guys, right? Top coaches, offensive mind, et cetera, et cetera. Why doesn't anybody, you know, why is it not working over there?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I just wanted to point that out, you know, amid all the Jets dysfunction that, you know, this is how things are built. And you know, teams don't fire their GMs after free agency in the draft. Houston just did. And as a matter of fact, I was just looking at an article about how Brandon Bean,
you know, Doug Whaley was fired the same day of the draft in Buffalo. And they brought Brandon Bean in to work with Sean McDermott. And they had a working history, a past history, working relationship. And everybody loves what Buffalo's doing now all of a sudden, right? Now Buffalo is the new high-ish. Well, how come when the Jets do exactly what Buffalo did, the Jets are a laughing stock? But we're over here clapping and celebrating the offseason that Buffalo had.
And oh, what a tangled web we weave. Try saying that five-time listeners. But down the stretch we come, Matt Mike, as we get down to the final leg of this show. And we got to talk about Dallas Keuchel and the Yankees passing on Dallas Keuchel in free agency. They still need another starting pitcher, Matt Mike. Okay? And Cashman has to get a deal done. If this team wants to win their 28th World Series title this season, they need to strengthen their starting rotation. They are on pace to burn their damn bullpen out. And many MLB executives believe that Dallas Keuchel will be the man to do that for general manager Brian Cashman and the New York Yankees, who, might I add, in a sarcastic way, listeners, the same general manager that our very own Mad Mike loves. Okay? The brave decision to outbid New York will send the Yankees into the trade market for a high-quality starting pitcher, as we know needs to be done, Mad Mike. The question isn't whether or not Cashman will try to make a deal for a starter. Instead, it's a question on how big of a swing the Yankees front office will be willing to make if they take that swing. Proven history with Brian Cashman has shown that the Yankees are giving us the impression that they're going to take the swing, and then they won't. And let's face it, this team could benefit from adding some starting pitching depth. Domingo Germán just went down with an injury, man, Mike. Okay, Paxton is not even throwing more than four innings just yet. J.A. Happ is J.A. Happ. C.C. Sabathia is C.C. Sabathia. He's not pitching terribly. But let's face it, when he grabs the ball, we're not like, okay, this is somebody that's going to stop the bleeding. And that was Domingo Germán, man, Mike, and that's a lot to put on a player who really didn't pitch that well last year.
Or a player who's never fully been healthy for an entire year. We're talking about a pitcher who came in on an innings limit to begin with. So, I don't know, man. I mean, listen, when you don't want to go the free agency route, when you don't want to go the trade route, I'm going to start here. And fans, I know I've said it before, and I know you're sick of hearing me, but when you don't want to go the trade route with Gerrit Cole a year ago, that ensured you were going to have to hit the free agent market. And I'm happy that they didn't get him, but the guy that ended up, Yu Darvish, they were in it to the end, right? But they missed out on him on just a couple million dollars a year, right? They just got, you know, outbid by the Cubs by a couple million. I think the Cubs went to 22. The Yankees were about 19. So were you serious about him, or were you only serious if he was willing to take less? That was one. Two, then last year, you know, me and you were having this argument last year, right? You got to go out. Who are you going to go out and get? Who was the key piece that you needed to use in a trade? And that was going to be who? The third baseman, Miguel Andujar, right? Well, he was the best hitter on the team last year because of all the injuries that hit in the second half. You couldn't get rid of him. So what happens? You have to make a lesser deal. You still got to raise your farm system, but you make a lesser deal for J.A. Happ, right? Then you miss out on Patrick Corbin in the offseason. And who do you have to turn to? You now have to turn to the same J.A. Happ, who, by the way, because you missed out on Patrick Corbin, now a guy you only want to give a two-year deal to at 36 years old, you now have to give him a three-year deal, which means he's going to be here at 39 years old. It's bad money spent. Anyway, once again, you have Severino out, right? And at the time, you're making all these trades, all these pickups. Miguel Andujar is still your number one trade chip. Not Clint Frazier because of the concussions. Miguel Andujar, not Floreal because of the broken wrist in spring training. It's still Miguel Andujar in the offseason. And for some reason, you don't pull the trigger. Well, when he tears his labrum in April, now everything goes to hell, right? Now, you have Gio Gonzalez. Obviously, when you know you're not going to have this guy for the entire year, Miguel Andujar, you got to keep Gio Gonzalez, Lloyd, right? We have to. You got to get him up here. For some reason, the Yankees didn't want to pay that $5 million. Instead, they go with Loaiza, who's never stayed healthy for his entire career. You got a Domingo Germán, who's never stayed healthy. You have a CC Sabathia, who has 2 and 3 DL stints a year now because of the knee. So, once again, what I'm saying is, when you don't make the trades to fortify the rotation, James Paxton, you went and traded for him. Is James Paxton available because of injury history? Why is James Paxton available to begin with? Think about that for a second. A guy who's never stayed healthy has already missed a month into the year for us. Think about that. So when I look at all of these things, I'm saying now you have to hit the free agent market, right? Well, in what year does a guy like Dallas Keuchel become available in June for money? Not prospects, money. And you're going to go get outbid by $2 million by the Braves? Why are you even talking to this man if you're only willing to pay $11 million. Their offer was between $10 and $11 million. How do you get outbid by the Braves? How? Doesn't make any sense to me.
And pitchers of that quality are hard to come by, man, Mike. They just simply are.
You're right. And I'm not to cut you off. Here's the thing, Lloyd. They're tied to two names. Those two names are who? Madison Bumgarner and Marcus Stroman. I'm telling you right now, they're not even in the ballpark for Marcus Stroman because they don't have the prospects to get him. And because, once again, your number one trade chip is still Miguel Andujar. And Toronto has Vlad Guerrero at third base. They're not even gonna entertain Miguel Andujar. The Giants, on the other hand, are out of it. Evan Longoria looks really bad. So if you're the Yankees, You can offer them, even though he's not healthy this year. They can rehab him. They can stash him for next year. They know he'll be ready. And then maybe you throw in a pitcher and another prospect and get Bumgarner on a rental. But remember something. Madison Bumgarner, it's going to cost you a ton of money. He's now got you by the BALLS. You know what I mean? Because now he's a free agent at the end of the year. You just traded key players, key prospects to get him. You're going to pay him whatever he wants.
You know, listen, you're absolutely right. And Bumgarner was one of the pitchers that I had the Yankees on tap were possibly making a trade for. Let's face it, man, Mike, the Giants aren't going nowhere in the NL West, and they need to add as much talent for the future as possible. And dealing Bumgarner to the Yankees for prospects could certainly help accelerate that rebuild in San Francisco. Obviously, like you was just saying, the fact he's due to enter free agency after this season is a major motivating factor. It has to be a major motivating factor for the Giants. And this could be proved to be a rental for the Yankees, as just you mentioned as well. Is this a rental that the Yankees are willing to take? Is it a rental that it makes sense for the Yankees to make? All right?
That's the thing. It can be. It can't be. If you trade a guy like Miguel Andujar or Clint Frazier, if you trade Andujar and Frazier, and by the way, I wouldn't be trading Frazier at all.
He's playing good baseball, man, Mike.
It's not about that. I mean, you have to get rid of Brett Gardner eventually. I mean, Brett Gardner's on base percentage is .291.
And he's hitting .219.
That's why I said it. His on base percentage is .291. For a guy who takes that many walks, think about how bad he must be hitting.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
His average going into yesterday's game was .219. He did hit a home run yesterday, but going into that game, he was hitting .219.
Yes, it's so, you know.
And I'm pretty sure Brett Gardner is not retiring after the season, so the Yankees turn around and sign him to another 1-year deal worth all that damn money?
Yeah, no. You can't do it. You can't do it. It's got to be over. If you're serious about contending for championships, it's time to cut the cord. We had this conversation. They could have had Michael Brantley instead of Brett Gardner. And instead, now Michael Brantley is looking like an all-star again in Houston, and Brett Gardner is looking like he's done. So these are the decisions, and I know the fans hate when I do this because, you know, Brian Cashman has a great track record. But when you look at everything, it's there's a lot of mistakes in there that can't be ignored, man. And that's another one. You bring up Brett Gardner. That's another one. If you're a serious World Series contender, Brett Gardner is not on your roster.
No, you're not. And this also thought another pitcher by the name of Mike Minor, Mad Mike. And the Rangers are currently finding themselves 3 games over .500. But they've already fallen 10 games behind the Astros and AL West. And that could easily turn Texas into sellers ahead of the trade deadline. So this is somebody else.
Floyd, Mike Minor's another guy, man. He's another guy they could have already had. He's another guy that now they're going to have to pay a higher price to get. They were in talks with Mike Minor. They could have already had this guy. He's actually a young lefty that came out of the Braves system that they've had their eye on for a while, that they've liked for a while. For some reason, Brian Cashman likes these guys, and he's always late to the party on them, and he always pays the price for it. You can't keep doing it. You can't go get a guy. You know, when he missed out, as a matter of fact, right, when he missed out on Jay Happ in free agency, what'd he do? 3 years later, he goes and he trades for Jay Happ from Toronto, and then he re-signed him. When he missed out on Carlos Beltran those years back when we were moving on from Nick Swisher, when he missed out on Carlos Beltran, what'd he do? He went and got him 2-3 years later when it was already too late. Can't keep making that either. No, you know what? Let Mike Minor go. Let it go.
Right, and as Matt Mike was saying, he brought up Marcus Stroman, and Stroman has made no secret of his interest in moving to a contender this season. Is easy to, it's not that easy to envision it, you know, the New York Yankees. And he's a native New Yorker. And I'm pretty sure he would be ecstatic to come to New York. And listen, Mad Mike, let's not let Stroman's 3-8 record fool you. He's been solid, very solid and above average starter this season for Toronto. His 3.31 ERA deserves a much more flattering win than his win-loss record. Somebody who I would go after, Mad Mike. More so, I mean, than Baumgartner, than the previous two guys we named.
Oh, If I can get Marcus Stroman and somehow, and like I said, I don't think Andrew Hart would even be part of the equation. If I can get him for a solid package and still have enough to go after Baumgartner, I would go after Baumgartner too and dangle Miguel Andrew Hart. You know, that's exactly what I would do.
So
I would make everybody except Clint Frazier available out of the young guys. If you really want him in, I think Gio Urshela has shown you that he can hit enough to make Miguel Andujar available. If you're going to get a guy like Baumgartner, if you can do Florial and say Abreu and somebody else for Stroman, I would do it in a heartbeat. Because this window might close. You know, you got to think about something. Dellin Betances looks like he had a setback. You don't know when he's going to get back on. He's a free agent after this year. Like we said, CeCe's a free agent. You don't know what's going to happen. Sometimes you just got to, it looks like what the Yankees have been trying to do is keep that window open for as long as possible. And sometimes you just got to make the moves. I mean, you have to. I'm not saying go and make the moves for 1 year and then, it's all over. But at the same time, you can't be like, oh, well, our window's 5 years. That window, what if, God forbid somebody tears their ACL and they're out for the next year and a half, or Severino actually needs surgery on the shoulder, or, we have no idea. Or Dellin Betances doesn't re-sign. You know what I mean? Like, sometimes you just got to say, hey, we have a good enough team. We have a deep enough farm. Tyler Wade looks like he's a player. You know what I mean? He looks like he might be a player that the Giants would be interested in, right? Able to play every position on the infield. Joe Panik is struggling out. I don't know, man. I'm just like spitballing right now, but I would start looking at making some of these moves.
And then another pitcher whose name I want to throw out there, man, Mike, is Trevor Bauer. Trevor Bauer from the Cleveland Indians. And Trevor, the Indians and the Yankees actually had discussions about a move for Bauer this summer, but Cleveland elected to hold on to him to see if they could make a push in the AL Central. Unfortunately, things haven't worked out for the Tribe. The Twins are already running away with that division, which would push the Indians to possibly explore what they could get for Bauer, Matt Mike. What's your thoughts on that move?
You're going to call me crazy, but he's a head case. And I know he's younger, but we're talking about a guy that's already threatened to play on one-year contracts for the rest of his career. I mean, you know, that's how quirky he is, that he's already said that that's what he wants to do. So, for me personally, if I'm looking at the Tribe, Carrasco just got hurt, just went on the IL. I'm monitoring Corey Kluber. I'm still monitoring Corey Kluber.
Okay.
I know he's older. I know that he's kind of struggled down the stretch, but that's the guy that I like.
And one other name I want to throw out there, and I think this is probably the most non-realistic of all the pitchers, is Matt Scherzer. And the Nationals, listeners, I'm not saying that the Nationals have him on a trade block because they haven't given any indications that they're interested in dealing their ace. But I do believe that it's in the Nationals' best interest to start to add young talent to their roster, getting rid of maybe, you know, nearly the $60 million due to Scherzer in the next two seasons. All right? And it might also hold some appeal for Washington's front office. And Scherzer is the only pitcher on the list that I just named who is a definite number one starter. He's already given the Nationals, for those who care, a 2.8 WAR with his 306 ERA this season. And Cashman in the Yankees front office, they got to be prepared, and they're going to have to be prepared to make a sizable offer if they choose to kick the tires with Scherzer, man, Mike.
The only thing, Lloyd, that I'm interested in and seeing when it comes to Scherzer is Scherzer has a lot of deferred money in his contract. And I'd like to see who's picking that up. Deferred money is not a practice the Yankees normally partake in. And what I'm saying, what I mean is think the Bobby Bonilla contract the Mets are still paying $1 million a year on. What they did at that time was defer a chunk of his money. And that's what the Nats did when they signed Max Scherzer. So I'd like to, before the Yankees, I'd just like to see how that works out. Because it's just like I said, it's not a practice the Yankees are into. And if that's going to, if you're telling me that Max Scherzer's contract and his deferred money is going to come back to bite me later when we're trying to chase free agents like Dallas Keuchel. If you're saying, hey, I couldn't sign Dallas Keuchel because, you know, I got to pay that $3 million deferred for Max Scherzer after, you know, for 20 years after he's done pitching for me, then no, thank you. I don't need that move. I don't need him. You know what I mean? Like, that's not a deal where, in the short term, yes, but that's not a deal where if you're going to tell me it's costing me later on that I want them to make.
There you have it, listeners, but the Yankees need to do something. They need to do something. They lost 2 out of 3. And who was it, Matt Mike? Before they lost 2 out of 3 in Cleveland, and they lost 2 out of 3 in Toronto.
Yes.
They need starting pitching, man. We're heading for a dead on collision course if they keep on utilizing the bullpen as much as they're utilizing them. They're gonna burn it. The one strength, they're gonna take that strength away from this organization, from this team.
But this is what I was telling you, Lloyd. You can't tell me if this is the style you want to play and you're saying I want to go with five-inning guys, even Tanaka, who's supposed to be an ace, who can't get through the lineup a third time, then you better get me an 8-man bullpen, and I'm telling you that you better be spending starter money on these relievers. You don't let Dave Robertson had a bad year. We kind of knew that was going to happen because of, you know, he spoke about it when he got back. You know, you kind of deal with the rejection of the Yankees not wanting, you know, of you not being able to play where it is you want to be. You know, he wanted to be a Yankee again. Anyway, you don't sign Ottavino and then let somebody else walk out the door. You know what I mean? You get Britton. You have Betances. You have Ottavino. You have David Robertson. You go out there and if there's someone else that can be had right now, Craig Kimbrell, you go and you get that. You don't want an ace, then don't get beat for Craig Kimbrel, you know what I mean, by the Cubs. And now all of a sudden, now me and you are having this conversation where we're saying, yo, we can't put those guys out. Right now you can't do that. Jonathan Holder's trash. Who's the other guy? Luis Sessa, he's trash. You got today or yesterday, Stephen Tarpley in the 10th inning. Stephen Tarpley hasn't looked very good this year.
He hasn't looked good at all. Didn't they send him down? They brought him back up?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So what I'm saying is you can't have that kind of bullpen if you have that kind of starting rotation. You know what I mean? Like your bullpen has to be a legit 8 pitchers deep if you want a rotation like the Yankees have built. And yeah, I know, Mad Mike, they didn't anticipate in June Severino wouldn't have thrown one inning for them. They didn't anticipate it. No, they didn't. But at the same time, once he got hurt in preseason and in spring training, you had to readjust your thought process.
Had to. And the Yankees didn't do that. Like Mad Mike said, it's like almost like Cashman has this team put together with Elmer's glue and hoping it doesn't fall apart. But it's Elmer's glue is not strong glue, listeners.
Gotta get that Gorilla Glue.
You know what I'm saying? It's going to fall apart. Lights. Like Mad Mike said, you need to get that Gorilla Glue and solidify this. Because let's face it, man, this team is hitting the snot out of the ball. Hitting the snot out of the ball. Mad Mike hit the nail right on the head. If you're going to expect your starters to throw 4 and 5 innings, then you need to solidify your bullpen. Big time. And although people are saying that the Yankees have the best bullpen in baseball, not saying they have the worst bullpen, but if that's how they're going to do things, they need, like you said, adding a Craig Kimbrel, you know, those are places you need to add if that's the direction that you're heading in, which seems to be the direction that they're heading in. But we'll see what happens. So let's move on, as we always do, to the part of the show that we all love, Mad Mike's rant. This is where Mad Mike goes in on something that he is not a fan of. So, Mad Mike, what's your rant for the week, brother?
Hey, Lloyd. Last Sunday night in New York, Clint Frazier had himself a hell of a game defensively. It was one to forget. And after the game, in which he botched the ball in right field, a line drive off the face, and he basically missed one, turned another one into a double. He basically cost the Yankees a game that they lost by 2 runs. He essentially lost them the game, right? He blew off the media that Sunday night, and the media went to task. The fans went to task on this young man. Now, I'm going to ask you a question before I go on. How hard is it to play right field compared to playing left field? Is there a difference as an outfielder?
There is a difference.
Do you track the balls any different in left field?
Well, I mean, it depends on the slice from a right-handed batter as compared to a left-handed batter. Me, personally, I think left field is easier to play than right field.
Thank you. That's a fact. That's 110% fact. Not only that, but the Yankees have one of the shortest right fields in baseball. So it's a little trickier to play right field for New York. You need to stop comparing this kid to Aaron Judge. First of all, he was a center fielder. A center fielder.
And he was drafted as a third baseman.
He was a center fielder for the Cleveland Indians. Remember that for a second. When the Yankees traded for him, the Yankees moved him to left field. To do what? Eventually replace Brett Gardner. So he is fairly new to left field. Okay? And now we're asking him not to learn right field, but to go play right field in big league games. And then when he has a bad game, we want him to come up and be totally humiliated on camera and answer for his errors. Enough already. This guy is one of the reasons they are one of the best teams in the American League. Offensively, he has been amazing. Last year, he lost a whole year to concussions in left field. You understand? He lost a whole year of development in left field. So he's only been playing left field for 1 year. This would be his third year in the Yankee organization playing left field, right? This season would be his third full year. Except last year, he lost the whole year to injury. So he's only had, besides this year, one full year in left field. It's fairly new to him there, too. So don't tell me that He's a bad left fielder too. No, he's not a bad outfielder. He is learning new positions, and he's doing it at the big league level. The same stuff we killed the Mets for with McNeil and Dominic Smith is what's happening to this kid in front of our eyes. The only reason that they blame the kid and not the organization, why? Is because the New York Yankees are not known for doing careless things like this.
Yeah, you're not. Listen, this is coming from somebody that was drafted to play center field. I can play just about every position on a baseball diamond. And center field and left field, for me, are my most comfortable positions. Right field, even though I can play and I can play it well, of the three outfield spots, it's my least comfortable position. I hate playing right field. It's not
I've
easy.
I've played left field, and I've played damn good left field. I can't figure out right field to save my life. And I've played a damn good left field. And I'm telling you right now, the people that are criticizing him are people that have never been asked to do something like this. And it's unfair to him, and I'm tired of hearing it. I'm tired of it. This guy is constantly fighting for respect. He's constantly fighting. Remember these bogus stories, the hair. The hair was approved by the New York Yankees, and Joe Girardi went public and said, oh, it's a distraction. You remember that?
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, somebody put out some fake story to Susan Waldman, who had to issue him a public apology about him asking for Mickey Mantle's number. It never happened. All I'm going to say about those two incidents, Joe Girardi got fired at the end of the year, and Clint Frazier was still here. Who do you think fed that story to Susan? I'm just saying, this kid has never had a fair shake. That's all I'm going to say.
It is, and there you have it. And it's about time. And with that being said, that's going to bring us to a close of this week's show. Me and Mad Mike would like to thank you, the listeners, for sticking with us week in and week out and supporting us. And we'd like to thank our producer, Ayo Omar Baker, who about this time is finishing up his cup of coffee, as always. We'd like to thank him as well. So listeners, please have a safe and blessed week as we are closing in on our 100th episode of this show, which is a monumental feat, Mad Mike. So we got to make that show a special one. So we got to come up with some things to make that show a special one. So listeners, again, like I said, have a safe and blessed week. And me and the Mad Mike will see you in 7 days. So, hey, yo, let's roll, baby.
One cup of coffee down and another cup of coffee to go. Before I sit down and watch the NBA Finals tonight, I think the Toronto Raptors are going to take it. Whether Durant comes back and plays for the Golden State Warriors or not, they're on their heels and Toronto has all of the momentum, so I predict they're going to be the 2019 NBA champions. You got the NBA draft coming up in a few days. RJ Barrett's obviously the favorite to be drafted by the New York Knicks, but you never know until you know. So make sure you subscribe to the Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike Sports Show. Everything you need to know, all the analysis, all the inside information, the scoop, if you will. Got it right here on the show. Brand new episodes drop every Monday wherever podcasts are available, including Spotify and Apple Podcasts. You hit LloydAThompson.com. You can send a question or two, and that'll be answered on the future episode of the show. And of course, make sure you follow on Instagram, on Twitter, at Lloyd A. Thompson. Throw two L's in that thing. Make sure you spell it correctly. All right? We'll catch y'all in 7 days. Lloyd A. Thompson, the Mad Mike Sports Show. Signing off. Peace.